is he starts from Moshe Rabbeinu and he goes right up to the end of the days of the Gemara. That is, roughly speaking, from 1300 BCE to 1300 BCE to 500 CE. So that's a period of
1800
years, right? That's a period of 1800 years. And he goes and he reckons out 40 generations from Moshe Rabbeinu to the end of the Gemara. Why it's so important to the end of the Gemara, he discusses a little bit later. But he brings it right up to the end of the Gemara. That means that there is an unbroken line of two parts, really. The one part is responsible for the teaching of the Torah, and we are speaking about the Torah Shebaalpeh, because the Torah Shebichsav is easy. You've got it all written down. But we are busy speaking about the Torah Shebaalpeh, which we've got embodied in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, in the Midrashim. So he brings it, so the one part is the teaching of it. The other part is the custodianship of it. There was always the custodian of the Torah, and the responsibility of the custodian was to see that it remained intact and it was handed down as it was received. Now, you know, the word that we use for that is Morosho. And we say Torah Tzivo Lonu Moshe. Moshe commanded us the Torah. Morosho Kehilas Yaakov. It is a Morosho of the congregation of Jacob. And the word Morosho doesn't mean an inheritance, but it is a better word, the best word I can think of in English is a trusteeship. The difference between a Yerusho and a Merosho is that a Yerusho, a person inherits, and he inherits to do with as he pleases. A Merosho, he's a custodian only. He inherits it, and he's got to pass it on to the next generation, whether it's his own children or whether it is to someone else, exactly as he received it. He can't lessen it, he can't take away anything of it. It must remain intact. That is the Morosho. And for that we needed a custodian. So there was always a custodian from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu right until the days of the end of the Gemara, which was approximately 500 of the common era. And it covers the whole thing. He covers everything. And then there was even the time when around about 200 of the common era, the school split. Then there was the Babylonian school started, that was even started in Ardor, Suro, and afterwards Pupadisa. And these schools existed for 1,000 years. That Babylonian Jewry existed for 1,000 years. And from there the Torah went, and you know I've discussed this already with you, that the Torah has got 10 golosim. The Torah will have 10
exiles.
Babylon was an exile of the Torah. North Africa was an exile of the Torah. Spain was an exile of the Torah. Then until the year 1940, until the year Topshin, 1940, the Torah was exiled to Eastern Europe. That was the reservoir of the Torah. That is where the home of the Torah was. And now we are somewhat at the crossroads. We can't quite make up our minds whether it is America or whether it is Israel that is the home of the Torah. And the two are vying for it. And I've got a tradition in my school that goes back to about 140 years at least. What are we now? I can remember much more than that. It's at least 150 years. It goes back at least 150 years, which said that America would be the last place, the goddess of the Torah, before it goes back to Israel. Israel. And I was told this at the time when it was the maddest thing imaginable that America would be the home of the terror. It's like saying that California is going to be the home of morality. I mean, you can't imagine anything.
Get that down on
that is when I was told that Reb Chaim Volozhiner said that the tilk, he let them all out, said, the tilk always would be America. When I was told, and I was told because when I had to make up my mind where I was going to study, whether it was going to be in Delta, whether it was going to be in Mir, one of my cousin of mine wanted me to go to Mir, and he said there were several Americans in Mir, and he felt that I'd integrate more easily once I went there. And I said, Americans, that's interesting. So he told me this. What do you want to say, Mark?
I have two questions.
Yes.
The one pertinent to what we're just speaking about is at the time that you heard this,
yes,
was America that much have that much more lower or moral standard overall, or was it just specifically in
Talmud Torah? I didn't know anything about the moral standard in those days.
It
was only in the question of Torah. You know, the gulf was so great by what we understood as the place of Torah and America. It was just you couldn't imagine anything like this. You follow it? It just wasn't right.
The other question I had was several hundred years ago, was there not also a line, well, it was in Eastern Europe, in the Sparkito also had their place of Torah also? Or was it considered at all?
Always, there were times when it was the Sephardim had it and we didn't have it. For example, in the year 1900, the home of the Torah was North Africa, and that was Sephardim. And it wasn't in Europe. And the next place was Europe. And there were very strong communities in Mainz. There were very strong communities, great men there. But it wasn't there. And at that time, Rome had a very strong community. And Padua and Leghorn, these places, great places. We've got Rabbeinu Yechiel was in Rome. We've got the Oruch was in the Rabbeinu Nosson was in there, Balikospas were there, but that wasn't, it was North Africa, it was Spartic, completely Spartic. So there were times when it was Spartic, there was times when it was you follow. And then when it went to Spain was Spartic. And then afterwards it went to, you follow, so that didn't matter. Don't forget that the difference between Sephardic and Ashkenazic is emphasized more by those who are distant from both than those who are close, as very often happens in these things. Those who are close don't understand what it's all about. Hello, Harry, come sit down. It's all right. So this is what the Rambam does. He brings down from Ashkenazic. Now, I just want you to see what the importance of it is. The Rambam says some, if I can just lay my hands on it quickly. The whole question of belief in authority is a difficult question. The whole question of belief in authority is a difficult question. I just want to show you something. There are laws of how what you do. We've got prophets. You see here. V'chi somar bilbovecho. Hashem says to Moshe, first of all, novi okim lohem mekerev achechem komecho. It's a question of how the Am Yisroel going to know what leadership will they have. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Yomer Hashem Eloi, and Moshe is speaking, Heitivu Eish Asher Debeinu, these people who ask him, what's going to happen to them when you go? It's a good question. Novi okim lohem mekerev achechem komelcho. Hashem says, I will raise up a prophet from out of the midst of their brethren like you. Now, we know, lo kom kemoshe od Yisroel novi. We know that there's been no other prophet like Moshe, no other novi like Moshe. But what it means, an authority like you. A man who will be in authority is Hashem. I won't forsake them. They will always have their authorities. V'nosati devorai befiv, and I will place my words in his mouth. V'diber aleihem, he will speak to them as kol asher atzaveinu, everything that I will command him. And v'hoyo ish asher lo ishmael devorai asher yedaber bishmi onel chedoshne mima. And if someone should arise that doesn't listen to me and says his own words and says that Hashem said this, he said, I will reckon with that man, I'll deal with him. But it's a very good question.
How do you know?
It's a nice, how do I know? Rabbi Yisrael knows. How do I know he's the right person? So he goes on to say, how will we know? He comes and he says, Hashem said it, how will we know it? Perhaps he did say it, perhaps he didn't say it. Asher yedaber anovi b'shem Hashem v'lo yigye adover v'lo yovohu adover asher v'lo yovohu hu adover asher lo dibro Hashem. If the novi will say in the name of Hashem, and that thing will not come to pass, and that matter will never be, then you will know that it's not spoken in the name of Hashem. If the novi comes and he says, I'll bring peace and peace, and there will be no wars anymore, and everything, and everything is love, and it's not like that, then we know that that isn't right. One thing. Now there's another. And to me, this other piece is the very basis of our faith. Eis kol hadovor asher onilchim etzaveeschem, osos tishmeru lasos. You must observe everything I do. Lo so sefer lo velo sigran emet. Hashem says you mustn't add anything to the Torah, and you mustn't subtract anything from the Torah. That's just as it is, as I gave it. What it means, you mustn't add anything to the Torah. You mustn't, for example, decide that into the mezuzah you're going to put three parshas, you see. Put more parshas, that you want to put the first chapter of Bereishis also into the mezuzah. That you're not allowed to do. You can keep 2 days, Yom Tov, if I'm doing it for a purpose. People, whatever it is, that. So now listen to this. Ki yokum bekir bechono vi ocholem chalo v'nosan elecha usum efeis. Should there arise amongst you a prophet or a dreamer of a dream, and he will give you an usum efeis. He will give you, say, I've got a sign and I've got a wonder, so that you can see Hashem sent me. Otherwise, you've got the right not to believe me. I'll do what as well. Uvoho osvamu feis asheri berei lecho. And it comes about. He's got a sign in the world. But Neilchom, when he said, Achrei Elohim Achirim Asher Lo Yedati Muno Odei. But what he said was something that was not in the Torah. It was against the Torah. But he does a sign. He goes, he takes you down to Malibu, and he says, I'm going to walk across to Long Beach. So you say, I can also do that. He said, how will you do it? Well, I'll start immediately. Oh no, he said, you're going the wrong way. You've got to go that way. He said, but that way is water. He said, well, that's not a point. I'll walk across the water. I said, that I don't believe. I said, all right, I'll do it. I'll tell you what, I'll start, you follow along the highway one. And he walks across the water. Does it? And he says, now do you believe me? Now, I have got a New Testament for you. Lo si shma el divrei hanovi ahu. Don't you listen to me. He's false. Frexachatasha, you know what Frexachatasha means? You've got to ask a question here. What's the question?
Where did he get the source to do the...
How can he do it? How does he walk across the water to the Chofetz Chaim couldn't do it. He can do it. How does he get there? Ki menase Hashem elokeichem eschem, Hashem is trying. Lodas ha'yishchem uavi misachem elokechem b'chol avavichem b'chol nashchem. This is a nisoyer. Now, it doesn't mean Hashem wants to know whether you keep whether you believe in Hashem with all your heart and so that's not. Belief is something for what one has to work very hard. And we know. No, just doesn't come by itself. You've got to work for it very hard. It comes with a tremendous test and trial. Then only do you get it. Then only. You've got it with Avraham Avinu. My uncle used to ask the question. What was the first great Nisoyan of Avraham Avinu? You know? Kibshonoi. Nimrod threw. He was a young man. And Nimrod became the leader, the tyrant of the whole world. And Avraham is preaching against his principles. One God, and that God is the owner of the universe, and we are subservient to him. He said, you're all subservient to me, said Nimrod. Don't start this business. And he goes on with it. He warns him once, and he warns him a second time, he said, if you do it a third time, I'm going to deal with you. Avraham does it. So he throws him into a fiery furnace. When he said to Avraham, now I've warned you, now I'm going to punish you, I'm throwing you into the furnace. Did Avraham for one moment think that he would be saved? Hashem had never spoken to him. This is what he came to, his own understanding. He came to this conclusion. His own understanding. And this was his belief. And Hashem, and he was quite certain that he can be killed. So why did he allow himself to do it? So my uncle said, why did Socrates drink of the potion? oriented to his cigar. Then Nevin said, yes, you quite right, I agree with you. Why did he have to think of the Persian? Why did he? If for an intellectual truth you give your life. I said, that's quite in order, you do that. I believe in America there was a Mr. and Mrs. Rosenberg gave their life for what they believed. They gave their life for what they believed. So he quite prepared to give his life. What was the last greatness when of all of them? He had 10 altogether.
Akedah.
Which was a greater one? The Ur Kasim or the Akedah?
In a sense, the first one, because he had no basis on which to.
Exactly. Even the Akedah God has already spoken to him. But with Ur Kasim, Hashem had never spoken to him. So Akedah, not only he knew Hashem already, but Hashem tells him to do it. Ur Kasim, nobody tells him to do it. Hashem tells him to do it. The Akedah is better. What do you want to say, Harry?
Could you just explain what the
Akedah
was?
The Akedah is binding Yitzchok, offering him up as a sacrifice. Okay. That is the last one, you see.
That was the last one.
So, my uncle asked, for the Akedah, the Torah goes to town. It goes to town for the Akedah. Is that what they call it in California?
Well,
I mean, pardon?
You've got the idiom now.
I thought I heard it, yeah. Ur Kasdim, the whole thing of Ur Kasdim is hidden. We only get a hint of it. Vayomer Elov ani Hashem Asher tzeisicho me'ur Kasdim. I am the Lord who brought you out from the furnace of Kasdim, from the fire of Kasdim. Lo ses lecho es oris reshto to give you. As soon as you did that, I brought you out from there. It was for this purpose to give you this land. That's the only thing we've got from it. That's the end. Hashem brought him out. That's the end. Nothing at all. An indirect reference. Such the event, and then Ketel glosses it over. That's a test of intellectual integrity. It's not a test of emuna, of belief, or of faith. That's intellectual integrity. See, intellectual integrity, a person can be an atheist, and he can also have intellectual integrity. That is not enough. No, it doesn't matter. See, look at the Akedah. Is the Akedah intellectual? It's mad. It's not intellectual. One's seichel hayoshor, one's logical mind says, you don't do a thing like this. There's no sense in that. To offer up a son, you don't do this. There's no sense in this. What's all this up for? When Isaac was born, you know, you were 100 years old. Now you're 137 years old. So what do you think that you're going to offer? You're going to have another miracle here. You're 137. Your wife is, look, since he was born, it's already 37 years have gone past since his birth. Look what you put into him. Are you going to leave it? Is this what it's going to be? And what's going to happen to you? And where's the promise? He felt that something happened that he didn't do right, he didn't deserve it. It's against the seichel. You know what seichel means? Against reasoning. So why does he do it? He's got no doubt that Hashem says this is what you've got to do. But no doubt. That is a test of emunah. That is a test of faith. For that, the Torah goes to town. The whole chapter, the whole parsha. That is the test. And he comes out of that, he emerges out of that. This is the right thing to do. He's got no doubt that it's right. He can't understand it. If we reach the stage that we know the Torah is right, we don't understand everything in the Torah, but we know it's right. We know that Hashem gave the Torah. If we know that is Torah min Hashemayim, if we know that it's Torah min Hashemayim, then comes the question of faith. If we don't know that it's Torah min Hashemayim, it's very difficult. So, if I wouldn't believe in Torah min Hashemayim, I wouldn't keep believing. Put myself into all these difficulties. Every morning, tie myself into knots. Shabbos, everything, so keep it so carefully. I go on a holiday, I travel. How often does it happen? I'm on a plane, I've got nothing to eat. They didn't bring the kosher food on. Happened very many times with me. I've got a 16-hour journey. So we've got nothing for you to eat. And we've got a banana. So, all this, if I don't believe in it, it's only a question I believe. So, what do I believe? That the Torah is min Hashemayim. Now, how do I know that the Torah is min Hashemayim? That's what the Rambam is so careful about this. See, do you know what it meant when the Am Yisrael stood at the Torah? I've told you how the Torah says how it's possible that you can see all this happening. A person does all sorts of miracles. Says, now, you believe me. That can happen, and you know that it is wrong, because what he says is against the Torah. I'll show you another Rambam. The Rambam says, Moshe Rabbeinu, lo he'eminu bo Yisroel mipnei ha'osu she'osu. Nobody believed in Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm sorry, not that. The people as a whole didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because of the miracles that he did. Because a person who believes because of a miracle that the man does, there is always a reservation. If there isn't, there should be a reservation. Because it's possible that he can do the sign through sleight of hand or whatever it is. He said, Elokoro Usushi also Moshe Bamidbo Lepiatsore Koso. All the miracles that Moshe did in the wilderness, he did it because of the need of the moment. Lolohobi Raya Alanabua. He didn't bring it as proof for prophecy. He had to drown the Egyptians. Korai Sayomits Lilon Beselko. The sea was split and they died there. So Chedu Lamozon, Holy Lord of Samon. They needed food, so the morn came down. They needed water, so there was the Baal. The Chen Shar Kolos is all the rest of the Yipstar. Uva Mehe Eminu Bo Bamamad Har Sinai. When did the Am Yisrael believe? At when they stood at Har Sinai, she Einenu Rohu Velo Zor. The Osnenu Shoma Velo Achel. When we saw, our eyes saw and nobody else's eyes, when our ears heard and nobody else's heard, only when Hashem spoke to Moshe and we actually heard Hashem speaking to Moshe. When we heard him speaking to Moshe, only then did the Am Yisrael believe. That is the great, no doubt anymore. So the question is, what our ancestors believe? How do we believe? How do we believe? We've got to believe that is actually what happened. Then we've got the Torah Shema then we've got the emuno in Torah min ha-shamayim. Do you understand the words I'm using? If not, please stop me. That is what the Rambam does here. So if you take the tradition, yes, you take the tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu until the end of the Gemara, we've got 40 generations. We know exactly who is responsible for the Torah to be taught, and who is the custodian for the Torah. We know that right until the end of the Gemara, without any break. So we are right there. That's part of the Rambam. From the end of the Gemara to now, it's easy to work it out very, very simply. That's easy. That's not difficult. These results here, they're already records. It's already written. Because then now it's after the time of the Gemara, everything was written down already. Once it's written down, it's easy to trace. So we've got all this right until Friday afternoon. I'm not up to date. But until Friday afternoon, we know exactly who's the custodian, we know exactly. Well, without any break. Of course we do. It's the last right afternoon, we know. You've got to be very careful not to fall into any traps. You see, the worst trap you can fall into is that you think as soon as a person gets a very important appointment, he becomes the authority. Once a person becomes an appointment, as I've told you, he's no longer an authority, even if he was an authority before. Because he's not a free person anymore.
Who's the guardian of the afternoon?
You mean in the
Torah?
In Torah, in the Assembly. The Stapler in Eretz Yisrael. There's a Major Feinstein here. We have a couple more. There are two more in Eretz Yisrael. There's Shlomo Zalman Al. There's Shlomo Zalman Erbach. There is who had a position and relinquished his position. And since he relinquished his position, he's become a very great authority. And that is a descendant from the Leshem Shvoa Shlomo. In America, you've got Moshe Feinstein, and these are the custodians of the Lord. Excuse me, just one moment, David. Yeah, you want to ask a question?
Yeah, I want to ask a couple of questions where the answer is in a vague way occur to me, but I can't really nail it down.
Yes.
You said that some sign or wonder, that therefore you shouldn't believe. Now, why wouldn't there be a problem? Abraham knew a lot
of stories. It doesn't say that you don't believe. If there's a sign and a wonder, but the person tells you to do something that is contrary to the Torah, we've got our beliefs.
Okay, while the analogy is not exact, is that would there have been no reason for Abraham to question whether the voice that told him to sacrifice his son was the voice of Hashem, if with all the Torah he knew, there seemed no basis on which to say that.
Well, the evidence here was no question. Hashem spoke to him directly.
He just has to know there's no way for any of the forces to imitate.
The first time when Hashem spoke to him is when he said, "Lech lecho ma'artzchum in olad before." Then Avram was 75 years old. That was the first time when God appeared to him. That was in a dream.
How old was
he? 75 years of age. That was in a dream. But for the Akedo, for then he was already a man of 137. Then Hashem spoke to me, there was no doubt.
You also speak of giving your life to intellectual
yes.
Beliefs.
Yes.
what about the limitation of giving the life beyond three reasons? So it's adultery and idolatry and murder. If the intellectual beliefs which your life is being given for, I don't say wished for, but literally given for, doesn't actually directly hit the issue.
That's not altogether right. That's not altogether right, because even when it comes to the question of giving your life in the terrorist sense of the word, for example, if I am taken and are brought to Tehran and I'm told that I've got to eat a traitor killed by Mohammedans as a demonstration that I don't believe in it, I must give my life for it.
I understand.
Even if it's not one of those, you follow? I've got to give my life for it, even if it's not one of those.
Okay, that's a
but this is another thing. A person, he can give his life for something that is wrong also. He intellectually believes it's true.
It is legitimate.
It's not legitimate. Don't say it's legitimate. Yeah, with Abraham Avinu, it was for Avodah Zarah. I don't say it's not legitimate at all. Well, the point is that people do that sort of thing. People do that sort of thing. They've got that. So they've got that spirit of sacrifice within them.
What does the law mean then?
What's the
din that you give your life for these three things?
Talking about doesn't mean that these people are giving their life for that.
Do you think people didn't give their life for a Avodah Zarah? It's wrong. They'll give it for the wrong thing also. That you can do. Now, then the Rambam does a very strange thing. He goes down from Moshe Rabbeinu, he goes right down to the end of his days, to the end of the days of the Gemara, and then you think, well, now I know it. Then he says, now let us reverse it. Let us start from the end of the Gemara. So he starts from Maravashi Ad Moshe Rabbeinu, Lovashulam Avoyim Doris Ve'en Lehen. So from Rav Ashi works backwards. Rav Ashi me Rovava, Rova me Rabova, Rabo me Ravunova, Ravuna me Rabbi Yochanan me Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan me Rabbi Shmuel me Rabbeinu Akorish, Rabbeinu Akorish me Rabbi Shimon Ovi. And he goes right down to Eli me Pinchos, Pinchos me Yoshua, Yoshua me Moshe Rabbeinu me Piyah Gevurah. And Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from Hashem himself. Nimtza shekulo Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So we see that everything comes down from Hashem Elokei Yisrael. The Torah we have got is a godly Torah. It's given, it's Devar Hashem. It's the word of Hashem. And that is Torah min Hashemayim. So he's got the 40 generations. Right until the end of the Gemara. Now, if we've got any idea of who these people were, absolute confidence. And it goes on right up to now. Never been afraid. Never been any brave. And that is the terror. And that is one of our pillars of our belief. Come down on the top without any break. I can't understand why the Rambam does what he does, puts in the extra paragraph. Starts from Moshe Rabbeinu, brings it down to the end of the Talmud, then starts from the end of the Talmud and goes backwards to Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know why he does. I'm trying to find out why he's done that.
Exactly the same people.
Exactly the same people.
Nobody left out.
The commentaries on this book, and they don't touch that question.
No, huh. I've never seen it touched. I've never seen that touched. The only person who could touch a thing like that would be the Ohr Sameach, but I don't. I think I would have come across it. Had it been the Ohr Sameach now, I would have come across it. That, you know, David asked me a question a few weeks ago, two possibilities. You think I didn't come across it. Now, I thought about it many times myself, I suppose, some way or other. Came across it, what was 2 weeks after you asked me, a month after you asked me, 2 weeks after you asked me, in my learning, I came across it suddenly. Suddenly I came across it for the first time. I'd never come across it before. The question he asked me was, how is it that Jews live in Germany, and Jews live in Russia, and Jews live in Lithuania, and Latvia, and Poland, and Spain, and England, and France, and America, and
South
North Africa, tip of South Africa, yes, Australia, New Zealand, China, Japan, India now. How is it? Is it just by chance? Is there a reason for it? I've come across that whole, the whole discussion. It doesn't belong to our own. So this is why it's Zeph. Now, you're not interested in that sort of thing, are you?
Of course not.
There were small communities in those areas.
Tell you what we'll do. I'll discuss it in Yiddish Hashem next week between 6:30 and 22 minutes to 7. Right? Kol Eilu HaChachomim, says the Rambam, Panis Korim, all these Chachomim, all these great and wise men, Panis Korim, that are mentioned, Hein Gedolei HaDoros, those were the great ones of the generations. Mehem Rosh Yeshivas, some of them were heads of the schools of learning. And you know, today you've got to be so careful of this sort of thing. It's a strange world that's come about today. I remember very clearly when a place like the seminary for the training of rabbis in Breslau was called the Hochschule, the university for the training of rabbis. You've got a place in Berlin. It was called the Seminary for the Training of Rabbis. You've got a place in Cincinnati. This was the first place in America, called the Hebrew Union College. Can you imagine what would have happened when the Hebrew Union College was founded if somebody referred to it as a yeshiva? It would have blown his head off. A few years ago, I read in the New York Chronicle, Hesford, if you please, was given for Nelson Glick the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati.
Who said that?
It's in the paper. That's the way they speak now. To the Jewish Chronicle. Very loud paper. But they speak like that today. They speak of the head of the UN as the Rosh Hashiva now. Speaking of the Rosh Hashiva. So you've got to be very careful. I just want you to know when the Rambam speaks of Mehem Rosh Yeshivas, what he means from there, amongst them they are the heads of schools, Umehem Rosh Golius, and of them they were the heads of the whole of the Golo in Babylon. They were the heads of the Golo, Umehem Sanhedrin Gedolo, and some of these belong to the Sanhedrin Agol, the great Sanhedrin, some of them belong to the Imoim Bechol Dol Vodol, and together with them in every single generation Alpaim Urevovos Sheshomu Mehem V'Imoim, there were thousands and tens of thousands who heard from them and together with them. and then the Rambam speaks of the thousand things, each one of them was great. But the custodians were these who rose it and chose us above all the others. Yes, Larry.
You have confidence in the custodians today in the same way as we do. Oh, yes.
There's been a terrific deterioration, but still, in all the deterioration, this is what it is. You see, you are at a very great disadvantage, and this is something, and now I understand certain things that my uncle was insistent about me. I once came to Eretz Yisroel. It was the first time I went to Eretz Yisroel. It was a very hard time, very difficult time in Eretz Yisroel. It was in 1951, end of 1950, beginning of 1951, Hanukkah 1950, beginning of 1951. And it was the Amezena. There was nothing to eat. But literally, there wasn't anything to eat. We were given special cards as tourists. We never used them. We gave them to people who were looking there. We were just there for 2 weeks. We were going out. And I went to say goodbye to my uncle. My uncle said to me, "Have you been up to see the Isis on the Zebra belts?" And I said, "No." He said, "How can you be here and you didn't come up to see me?" I said, "I can't understand." He said, "Go up immediately." I said, "I can't, I've got a taxi, I'll miss my plane." He said, "Nevertheless, go up and see him." I said, "I can't, I've missed my plane. Next time I come, you'll be the Isis on the Mills. It wasn't there anymore, and to this day, I regret it. I can't forgive myself to this day. I would miss the plane. Rather miss the plane than miss the Isis on the Mills. Much rather have missed the plane." And what it means today that I've seen those people whom I did see, what it means to me today. Our Mr. Peter says on the Nelson. That he was most insistent on that. And see, when you see the distance between the gulf. It's unbridgeable. You can't cross it. It's impossible to cross it. We are really. I just have to run through a piece of Gemara with you, but the Gemara itself is it's important Gemara because of the principles that are raised in the Gemara. Saul, if you say the Gemara for me, please start with Rav Zavid Shor Lemiva Befid Bidekilo Bechavos. Rav Zavid, yes. Have you got? Yes.
Yeah. It's the take it down.
Quite easy to find.
Not before you go.
Just under my finger there. Rav Zavid Shoro.
Rav Zavid Shoro Lemival Bitzil of Shabbos.
Now, what does that mean?
Rav Zavid permitted to make the to have it be at the beginning of Shabbos.
Rav Zavid Shoro Lemival permitted the first beer on Shabbos. Yes.
Because of Amre, some.
There are those who say.
There, Rav Zavid Gufe boiled Bitzil of Shabbos. So, Rav Zavid himself. Was made the first big alarm on Shabbos,
which is going a step further. The first one says that he permitted the first beer to take place on Shabbos. Now we go a step. Have you got the place? Now we get there. The equally Amri. There are those who say not only did he permit it, but he himself made the first beer in Shabbos. Because sometimes you will get a situation where a man will say, "Well, according to the deen, you are permitted to do it." For himself, he will be machmir. For himself, he will take a severe view, and he won't do it. But here we've got, there are those who say Rav Zavid guf a boil b'techila b'Shabbos. He made the first beer on Shabbos. And if Rav Zavid made the first beer on Shabbos, we are more than inclined to say that it's permitted to make the first beer on Shabbos. That is one thing. Finished. We don't go back to that now. So we've got a psak halacha there. In the Gemara itself, we've got a conclusion. Let's go to the next point. What does Rabbi Yehuda say?
Rabbi Yehuda shar lemivul b'tchila b'yantiv. Rabbi Yehuda allowed to make the first bia on Yom Tov.
On Yom Tov. Now, just need to take the statement as it says. Rabbi Yehuda permitted the first bia to be made on Yom Tov. Now, what are we discussing where the first bia can be made on Shabbos? So, if he said the first bia can be made on Yom Tov, we can draw one of two conclusions with regard what would be on Shabbos. What is the one conclusion?
That it wouldn't be allowed.
That it wouldn't be allowed on Shabbos. Yom Tov, yes, but Shabbos not. Another conclusion is that in the same way it's permitted on Yom Tov, it's permitted on Shabbos. But he was asked on Yom Tov. He was asked on Yom Tov, okay, are you allowed to do it on Yom Tov? He said yes. But the same, if he would have been asked for Shabbos, he would have said Shabbos too. So there are two possibilities. We don't know which one to take. Let us see what where the Gemara will help us. Yes?
I'm going to pop a
mission. Or be careful, call him by his right name.
Papi.
Omar Rav Papi. Said Rav Papi.
Mishmei Derava, in the name of Rava. Lo tema biyantiv deshar hava Shabbos osir. Don't think that on Yom Tov he permitted it, but on Shabbos he prohibited.
Don't say that on Yom Tov he permitted it, but on Shabbos he prohibited it.
Dehua din dafilu b'Shabbos namishor, because it's the same din that even on Shabbos it was also permitted.
Yes.
Umaseh shahoya. And what happened was, it was asked on Yom Tov, and that's why he
answered just
on Yom Tov.
The happening happened to be on Yom Tov. It was like that. The happening was that it happened to be on Yom Tov that he was asked for Yom Tov. He gave the answer for Yom Tov, but the same is for Yom Tov. That was the statement of Rav Papi in the name of Rava. Rav Papa,
Mishmei D'Rava Amar.
Don't confuse the two. Rav Papi, and now we've got Rav Papa. Rav Papa said,
in the name of Rava, B'yantif Shor B'Shabbos Aser. And on Yom Tov he permitted it, on Shabbos he said it was not permitted.
Rav Papa said in the name of Rava, Shabbos, Yom Tov, yes. Shabbos, no. Just take it as far as that piece of Gemara. Now, what the Gemara is going to do now, and this is the sugya within the sugya, what the Gemara is going to do now, it's going to analyze why Yom Tov yes and Shabbos not. What is the difference between the two?
What is sugya?
A sugya is
a topical section, it's a
piece of Gemara which covers one particular subject. So the sugya that we are doing is whether you can do the first beyond Shabbos. That's the sugya. The sugya, the self sugya, the sugya within the sugya is the difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Things that are permitted on Yom Tov and prohibited on Shabbos. You follow? Mm-hmm. And this is an important sugya from various points of view. From our particular point of view, is that once we have done 10 blot of Gemara, 10 pages of Gemara, not blot, 5 blot of Gemara, the first 6 pages I learn a certain way. When you've mastered the first 6 pages, then I've got another 3 pages that are 3 duff. But I'm doing it a little bit before. We've done 10 pages, we've done 5 duff in. We are now on the 6th duff, and I'm already starting a deeper type of learning with you. And what we are going to do now is this question, the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Are there things that are permitted on Yom Tov that are prohibited on Shabbos? And what are the things that are permitted on Yom Tov and prohibited in Shabbos? And the most important question is, why is the difference, and what are the guiding principles? What is the guiding principle, or what are the guiding principles? What are the formulae? What are the postulates upon which we work? That is what we've got to find out. Take the next piece, please. So?
Amalei Rav Papa, Lita Papa, said Rav Papa to Rav Papa, my daughter, what is your, for what reason do you say that it would be mutter on Yom Tov but not on Shabbos?
Yes. Amalei Rav Papa, Rav Papa, you say that he said on Yom Tov it is permitted, on Shabbos not. That's what you say. My daughter, what is your reasoning? My daitech, what is your reasoning? Yes?
Mitach shehutra chavura letzorach, chutra namashalo letzorach, that because they permit a wound to be made for letzorach, for the need of Yom Tov.
Yes, now, you see, here you've got to be careful. If you look at your Rashi, Rashi says, Letzorech, my daitech, lemishri yom tov yosef mishabbos. He says, what is your reasoning? Just use your Rashi also. What is your reasoning to permit yom tov more than on Shabbos? He says, your reasoning must be because of the principle, mitel shehutro avoro
letzorech.
I'm sorry, mitel shehutro chaburo letzorech. Since making a wound is permitted on Yom Tov, Rashi says, for the necessity, for the need of ilchel nefesh, for the need of food, one can make a wound on Yom Tov. We know we can make a wound on Yom Tov, from where we know we will soon discuss. What does it mean? Says Rashi, kedon shchita, for example, shchita. On Yom Tov, a shochet is permitted to shecht a fowl, or to shecht a sheep, or to shecht an ox. And the meat is taken, and the carcass is flayed, and the meat is cut up, and one can take that meat and one can use it on Yom Tov. One can use one's meal on Yom Tov. It's permitted to do that on Yom Tov. Why? When we discussed that you're not allowed to make the first bee on Shabbos, what was the idea? Because of chabura, because of the wound. So we say, since you are allowed to make a chabura on Yom Tov, for example, for ochel nefesh, that is for shechita, for reasons of food, therefore you are allowed to make a chabura on Yom Tov, even if it's not the tzarech ochel nefesh. So, just to take the Dibitel shehutro chabura letzorech, hutro nami shelo letzorech. Therefore you should be able to make, that is why you can make the first beer on Yom Tov. That is your reasoning. That is the basis of it. Now, we will have to understand what kind of a reasoning is this. It says, since it is permitted, that is the basis, since it is permitted to do a malocha, to do work on Yom Tov, that is for Tzorech Ochel Nefesh, it is permitted to do it even not Letzorech Ochel Nefesh. A sprung? That's a jump. That's a jump. So where do you get something like that? That is what we've got to discuss. Go on further.
Elamayata, once you've already...
Elamayata, now this is Rav Papi saying to Rav Popo. Elamayata, now...
From now, now that you've
now, now that, you've, that is the principle.
Mutalasos mugmer beyond you should be permitted to make a mugmer, which is to make a misomim, to make spices on the fire in order to make your clothes smell better,
or to make the room smell better.
Because since the burning or making a flame has been permitted on Yom Tov.
Since the use of fire is permitted on Yom Tov, in order to cook food, therefore it is permitted, even if it's not to cook food, it is permitted to make the room smell beautiful. For fragrance is permitted also. That is the movement. but does this sound right? So what he's saying is, well, how far can you go? How far can you go? Omar Lay said, Rav Papa to Rav Papi, please continue.
Omar Lay, Alecho Omakarov, it is for you that the Pasuk says, Ach Asher Yechol,
Ye Ocheil,
Ach Asher Yechol, Lechol Nefesh, Dover Hashavah Lechol Nefesh.
Accepting that which is eaten lechol nefesh by all people, dovor hashoveh lechol nefesh, it must be something that is common to all human, to all people. Now, I don't burn incense in my house to make it smell nice. So who does it? Very wealthy people. Or mefunokim. A mefunok is a fastidious person. A mefunok is a person who does it. He burns incense. But it's not a dover lechol, lechove lechol nefesh. Not everybody does it. If it's not shove lechol nefesh, that you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov because of mitzvah. So what we come to now is this. Mitoch, since it is permitted to do it for Ochel Nefesh, it is permitted also to do it if it's not for Ochel Nefesh. Since it is permitted to make a wound, to shecht an animal that I can eat it on Yom Tov, I can shecht the animal Yom Tov, therefore it is permitted to do the first beer in Yom Tov also. He said, but mugmer, then it should be mugmer also. Since I'm permitted to use fire for cooking on Yom Tov, therefore I should be able to use the fire, the coals, and put the spices on it in order that this beautiful smell should go all over the room. I should be able to do it in Yom Tov. There's only one thing that he doesn't conform with, one principle, and what is that principle? The principle of Shoveh Lechol Nefesh. It's got to be common to all people. Not all people go eat for that. But Bio, common to all people. If it's common to all people, that is why the first beer can be made on Yom Tov. Got the idea? And you see what the book learns.
What is the word mitoch?
Mitoch, since. Since it is permitted, therefore it is permitted, let's say the Cheshul Nefesh too. Have you got the idea? All right. Now, let us go. I'd like to finish this piece of Gemara with the Rashi, and then we can just sit back and discuss it together with the Tosfos. But you must get the hang of it. Yes, carry on.
Amalei Rav Acha Berei D'Rava L'Rav Asher, said Rav Acha, the son of Rava, to Rav Ashi, Elamayato, but from now...
Now, yeah. On the basis of what we have learned.
What we've learned. Is Damanlot Svi Bianta, if somebody prepared a...
There happened to be already at hand on Yom Tov
a deer.
A deer.
Because, according to what you said, since it is not something which is equal to all people, since not everybody can eat deer or has the capacity to afford deer, would it be also prohibited to shecht this deer now?
Would you say that it's permitted to shecht the deer because...
Because they're in trouble with all.
Have you ever tasted venison?
No.
You know what venison is?
Yes.
Well, also something, but you've never tasted it. Have you ever tasted venison?
No.
Have you ever tasted venison?
I don't know. How can you catch a deer to shecht it? I don't understand.
That's the problem. Very easy. You take a piece of bread, you go out and you give it to the deer, and it comes up. And you tickle him under his chin, he joys at no end. And he comes back for more and more and more, and then you catch him. Very simple.
High efficiency.
Very simple. I've done it.
Did you shock them?
No.
You get to like him too much at that.
It's not an even thing. Yeah, that's where you catch a deer. But yet it's not the... Yeah.
So I should go up to my deer?
Yeah. It's not D-E-A-R. It's oh. D-E-E-R. Right. So now but what it says, Yan, is Domino Tzviba Yom Tov. It's already speaking after this. It doesn't deal with how you catch him, Phil. It's not dealing with how you catch him. Yeah, it's after that stage already. Vizdamelo. He's got ready a deer. Is Vizdamelo. I mean, it's ready at hand on Yom Tov. Now, who will carry on, please? Would you say
that it would be prohibited to shecht the deer?
Because it's not shovel l'chol nevesh. Because here we are in our whole room, and I doubt if 20% of the people here have tasted venison.
Shecht it properly, you mean.
Otherwise, nobody would touch it. Yes. This is the where we are. Omar le ano. Dovor.
Dovor atzorof chol nefesh kamino.
Tzvi.
Tzvi atzorof chol nefesh hu.
Yes. He says it may be that not everybody eats it,
but
it's everybody's fair. But everybody, it's something that is eatable by everybody. It's something that is eatable by everybody. Nobody would refuse it because it's venison. Says, I don't eat venison at all. It's common to everybody, yes?
I have a problem with this point. The way we're understanding it, we can learn the other way too. Everybody who would have the opportunity to have the bisamim would also like that too.
Well, just imagine the situation. Imagine the situation. I didn't need it. If I come into your house and the lady of the house says to me, should I do the mukma? For my part, it's not necessary. If she said, would you eat venison? By the entire day. What's the difference? If it's venison, or if it's beef, or if it's mutton, or if it's lamb, or if it's poultry. What's the difference? I eat it. It's food. I'll eat it. You follow? It sustains life. It's food. But mugmar is a... If you ask me about mugmar, I would probably say to the woman, I prefer not having it. Because it's usually a sickly, sweet smell. I just can't take it. There's a sickliness about it. You've got to be a cousin. You know, I'd rather you didn't put it on. You follow? It's,
well, I'm as equally unfamiliar with Muslim as I am with even Venice.
Yes. Yes, but you're not going to say this isn't food, is it?
It's not really speaking about the specific cases. You're just giving examples that over here this is food, and food is common to everybody, and over here this is like a luxury which is not common to everybody.
Right. Let's go further. Omar Abi Yaakov, buddy.
Maybe if Mark were hungry enough, he'd know the difference between Muslim and Venice.
Well, never do. I'd like somebody else, either anybody else who would be prepared to say the Gemara on from now. Come on, right, come on. Omar Rabbi Yaakov.
Omar Rabbi Yaakov, or Edi, Hira Rabbi Yochanan, the Tzido. Rabbi Yochanan put down a psak in Tzido.
Yes.
Also, Lichol B'Tchil B'Shabbos. That you are forbidden to make the first diya in the beginning on Friday night.
Yes. Now, what the Gemara is going to take up now is, the Gemara doesn't like the expression. The Gemara says, he reached a decision that it's prohibited to do the first bia on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, for that you need a decision. For the matter of news, she says, I've got a three-roomed flat at home. Somebody wants to come and spend the Shabbos with us for the greatest of pleasure. Person comes along and says to me, my wife and I and my two children and our three dogs and our two cats want to come and spend 2 weeks with you. I say, well, I've got to think the matter over.
Haven't thought it over already.
After 72 hours, he comes to me, he said, you know, I've got to know already. I said, well, I've given it a lot of thought and I've come to the conclusion and my decision is no. What did he say to me? For no, you didn't have to take 72 hours and you didn't have to reach a conclusion. A decision would have been enough. You didn't need a conclusion for that. You don't, for that, you don't. To say no, you don't have to have horror. Horror means careful. You've gone into the whole thing, and this has been the psakalocha. He said, for to say that it's forbidden to use the term halacha, umi iko haroa le'isu, says the, go on please, Israel, says the Gemara.
Umi iko haroa le'isu. And why should there be a hurrah for Israel? Why should there
can
be
there be asked the Gemara umi ikah hurrah le'isu? Is there then hurrah or for that which is prohibited? You make a statement; it's prohibited. You don't have to make a pronouncement. The statement is enough. Answers the Gemara.
In there is.
Yes, we use hurrah for Israel. Yes, behold,
we learned in the Mishnah.
Haruha
Beit Hillel Shetei Mazira Od Shevashonim Acheris, that the Beit Hillel were passed and made a Pesach, that the
made a Pesach for her. Haruha, they made a Pesach for her.
Right.
That is for Helena Hamalko, for the Queen Helena.
Right,
yes.
That she has to be.
You know who Queen Helena is. Well, we see just now. Shetei Nazira.
Shetei Nazira, that she has to be another, Od Shevashonim Acheris, another 7 years.
Another 7 years. She's got to be a Nazira.
Yeah.
So what happened?
She was in Chutz La'aretz. She made a.
She was the queen of. Her husband, Monabaz, was the king of a kingdom that was towards. It was the northeast of Eretz Yisrael. It was the northwest of Babylon, where north of Babylon, near the top where the Tigris, the source of the Tigris is, near Syria, Assyria, around those parts. There was a kingdom there, and Monabaz and Helena were the king and queen respectively of that kingdom.
What is Nazira?
I'll explain it to you in a moment. And Monabaz and Helena came very strongly under the influence of Jews, and they started practicing Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noah, and then they started practicing more, and eventually they became Jewish. And Monabaz, and then after Monabaz, there was his son, also named Monabaz, who took over. And Elena was the queen mother. And Monabaz went out to war, and Elena took upon herself that to be a Naziro, that is a Nazarene. That means she wouldn't have any strong drink, and she wouldn't cut her hair, and she would live a life of seclusion for 7 years, were he to come back in peace. And he did come back in peace, and she kept this, and towards the end of the 7 years she went to Eretz Yisrael. Now the difficulty is that a Naziro, a Nozir or a Naziro, at the end of 7 years has got to bring a sacrifice. In Chutzlah order she can't bring the sacrifice. By the way, this was in the time, so at the end, the last days, the last years of the first temple, of the first Beis HaMikdash. This was around about the year 1340 of the Common Era. There's another law, and that is that a Nozir is not permitted to associate with a dead body in any way. He's not allowed to impurify himself by coming into contact with a dead body. In Eretz Yisrael, graves were very carefully marked so that the Kohen should know that he's not allowed to go there, and the Nozir or the Naziro should know that they are not allowed to go there. It was very carefully marked. In Chutz La'aretz, it wasn't marked there, and they didn't worry about those things. The Goyim didn't worry about those things. So it was easy for a person to become defiled. And if a Nozir does something that is against his Nazirus, then he's got to count all over again. So Stam Nazirus, if a person just takes, he wants to be a Nazarene, he's a Nazarene, a Nozir, for 30 days. But he can undertake to be for longer. She undertook for 7 years. Shimshon was what we call a Nozir Olam. His whole life had to be spent as a Nozir. That's an exceptional case with Shimshon. But a person, if he wants to, can say, I want to be a Nozir like Shimshon. So for the rest of the life, he goes into seclusion in that particular way. Is that clear? But the difficulty with being in Chutz La'aretz is that she might have gone on a grave unbeknown to her. If she goes on the grave, then it starts all over again. Did she? Didn't she? Would she have known? Wouldn't she have known? Is it possible? Isn't it possible? All these doubts arose, so they came to Beis Hillel, had to give a psak for her. Now, she's nearly finished the 7 years of her Nazirus in Chutz La'aretz. Now she is transferring herself, she's emigrating to Eretz Yisrael. So what does she do? Does she carry on and finish it? Or does she start all over again? So her ruah, they made a psak for her, basically. So, and we use the word her ruah. It's for a negative, it's a negative ruling. So for a negative ruling, have you got to use the word her ruah? But they did use the word her ruah. So we've got that case, yes.
The Inami, or another case. He had the son here, like we learned in the Brisa. Chut Hashadra Shemitah.
Hashedra.
Hashedra. Chut Hashedra Shemitah Beruvo. Divrei Rebbe. If the spinal cord of an animal, when they take it out for the Bedikah to examine it after Shemitah, is split in the most part of it.
Yes, that is the cord itself, you see. You know, you've got the spinal cord, that the spine that goes down and consists of vertebrae. And then through the vertebrae there is a cord that goes through. It's about as thick as that, I suppose, in an animal, if not thicker. That goes through that spinal cord. Now in the spinal cord, if the majority is severed, then Rebbe says that it's treif. You've got to put in the word treif, or Rashi says, Chuta Shevichen Ivza Beruba Treifo Divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says then the animal is treif. Rabbi Yaakov Omer,
I feel with Nico,
Mikav.
Even if a perforation.
Even if it's just a perforation, just touch the animal's tape. And?
Rabbi to Rabbi Yaakov. And then Rabbi Paskin, he made a psak like Rabbi Yaakov.
Yaakov, which is a strict review, severe review. For that, have you got to give a psak? You make a statement, says, I accept that, I rule that. But to give a decision about that. But nevertheless, we see it. Omarav, yes.
Omarav, Huna en halachik Reb Yaakov. The halach is not like Reb Yaakov.
Till there. But here we see that they use the word Oruah. Now, I just want to know from you. I mean, so what is this? Is this child's play here? Do you use Oruah? Don't you use Oruah for negative reasons? We don't use Oruah. The Gemara says we do use Oruah. What's it all about? You follow what I'm asking? Any suggestions? What's the Gemara doing? You've got to understand it.
Rabbi, I'm confused about the whole problem that the Gemara raises about Arura, when it's difficult, when it's not. It would seem to me that when you've got a case where it's pretty clear cut, yes or no, you don't go through this Arura stuff. Whenever you have a tough question,
yes,
where it could go either way, and it goes on a fine line, it goes on a tightrope, then it's tough either way. And if it's tough, you're going to get pretty much to a 50% chance, yes or no. So I don't see the problem in saying that he gave a conclusion that either yes or no.
You don't see a problem in it at all.
No.
Well,
because when you have a tough problem, whichever way it's going
to
go.
Yes. But the thing is, yes, you see, they say, if you've got a tough problem, and you're going to say it's not permitted, then what's all the fuss about?
Because?
It's not permitted. They say it's not permitted. They are worried, first of all, they're worried about Rabbi Yochanan said in Sidon, that he hore, that it's not permitted to make the first Beel Shabbos. Holy is a very strong word to use. They said, what did he want to use holy for? Not to make the first Beel Shabbos. He could have said, in the whole Gemara we haven't had that word yet.
The reason for a fuss is the same reason that we've been going through all this time, and we can't seem, and we couldn't for a long time. There were very good arguments why you could have the first Beel Shabbos, very good arguments why you could not have the first Beel Shabbos, and so it takes a long time. No. Either way.
The point is that if you come to a negative conclusion, even if it's wrong, you're still protecting the law. The law is still protected. Nothing gets hurt.
But it could have been a error still.
No, but on the other hand, if you allow something wrongly, then you've really caused the problem.
I see
what
you're
example,
saying.
If you allow sexual intercourse on Shabbos, if you allow a bee on Shabbos, and you really shouldn't have, that's a very serious infringement. If you don't allow it,
it's not as much.
You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong. That's right.
So
I understand. Although it could, although I would still.
So what's the big deal, as they say?
To say that you can't.
You can't make the first deal, Shabbos. To use the word over.
Wouldn't it be just as bad, wouldn't it be almost as bad, if not just as bad, to ask for something which was permitted?
Well, this is the whole point. You've got to understand it. There's just one small thing that you've got to understand here. And this is the point that the Gemara makes. When the Gemara says, hey, when the Gemara says, what's the big deal here? Well, hold on. Say it's not permitted. We've got a doubt here. It's Iboyana who we don't know. We've got all the points for and against. Say he prohibited it. If he uses the word Horuah, it means that he's made it different from others. If a person says, I prohibit it, fine. But if he says, I've come to a conclusion after careful thought, this is the decision. It puts him in a very difficult position, and he said, oh, wrong. But there's just one small point. You've got the idea, but there's one small point you've got to understand. And that is, what the Gemara is saying is this. When Rabbi Yochanan said in Sidon that it's prohibited to do the first beer on Shabbos, when Beis Hillel Paskin for Helena Hamalko, you know what Hamalko means? Helena Hamalko, that she's got to do the 7 years over again, they would have preferred to say, you are allowed to make the lesbian shots. They would have preferred to say to her, you don't have to have another 7 years over. You can be quite sure that they spend days and nights and sleepless nights trying to work out a case that she shouldn't have to do another 7 years. It's a terrible thing. She's done it already. She did it for a purpose. The purpose has been served. You can imagine what went through to try and get it that it should be permitted. And then they say, no, it's Hurua. That is the point that the Gemara makes. But you've got to realize what they did in order to do it. I saw a Rav once in Eastern Europe. A report. Working on a shayla to make a, for a woman to make a chicken kosher. It would have been the easiest thing to say, look here. Don't use it. Don't use it. Take another chicken. It would be the easiest thing. What went into it? He knew that if it wasn't that chicken, she'd have nothing to eat for Shabbos. That he knew. She couldn't afford it. That he knew. Not only that, I would have said, give her a chicken, your own chicken, finish. It's not worth all the trouble. I knew something else was said. He was in exactly the same position as the woman was. You've never seen such poverty. And what a man he was. But you've never seen such poverty. His wife was, his wife's grandmother was the granddaughter of the Vilna Gaon. And it came in the front, you came into the kitchen. And the kitchen, there was no flooring. It was on the raw ground. And in the house, there was one room, and the room was divided like a room much smaller than this, and there was a curtain, and this was the bedroom. There was a curtain, and here was his sforim, and the table, and here the head, and this was the living room and everything. Half the living room was floors and half the living room was floors. They didn't have the money for it. So you think he's got another chicken he can give her? And what greatness there was there. What greatness. And I went there and I specially spent a day with him. His son studied in Slobodkin. He said once, the train passes, if you one day just spend a day with my parents, it means so much for them. I said, of course I'll do it. And it's an experience that I'll never forget. So we're working on a shy little chicken. What he didn't only do. And the chicken, and the swirling, and that. Eventually found a way out there. So yes. What he does. That's why they do it. Right. Let us finish this off.
Machen bar Yitzchak, Machna Hachi. Rav bar Yitzchak learned from here.
No. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Masni Hachi. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak taught as follows.
Amar Rav Avua.
Omar Rabbi Abua. Said Rabbi Abua.
Sha'al Rav Yishmael ben Yaakov, the min tzur, et Rabbi Yochanan b'tzaydon.
B'tzaydon.
Right. Rabbi Yishmael ben Yaakov asked from tzur, Rabbi Yochanan from tzaydon.
Yes.
Ba'ana Shema'o, and I heard him.
Says Rabbi Abua, and I heard it. I was there. Ma'u.
Lithol b'tzila b'shavas. What is the din on the first dia on Shabbos? Amrlei Aser. And he said to him that it was Aser was forbidden.
So there's no question that Rabbi Yochanan inside and said it's also Vehilchoso.
And Allah is Mutter Livol B'Tfilah B'Shabbos. That you're permitted to make the first dia
on Shabbos. That is as far as this is concerned. That is the conclusion that we come to. Mutter to make the first dia on Shabbos. That's the way we passed it. Sroor, you do the first Rashi on your piece of Gemara. Sol and Sroor will do on the second piece. My Daiteich. Yes, carry on, please. My Daiteich.
Lemishra Yontav Yosef Mi Bishabbos. What is your reasoning for allowing an Yontav more than for Shabbos? If you would say, Letzorach Ochel Nefesh, because of Letzorach Ochel Nefesh, because of need for personal needs, Kagon Shechita, it's for eating. Kagon Shechita, such as Shechita, slaughtering.
The principle is, Mitoch Shehutra Letzorach, Mitoch Shehutra Chaburo Letzorach, says Rashi, Letzorach Ochel Nefesh, Kagon Shechita. Therefore, it should be mutter for the beer also.
But according to this reasoning, mutalas is mugmer beyantiv. You should be allowed to make mugmer, which is besamim al ha'esh, besamim spices on a fire, ligmar to.
The word I think is legameir.
Legameir.
Ligmar is to finish.
Right.
Legameir is to
refresh.
To send, yes.
It's like Kalim Vesavagodim, the utensils, everything.
Utensils and clothing is also put in to make the clothing smell nice, yes. You know, women do it today. They use eau de cologne and scent and everything to make the clothes smell nice. Yes. They take a bit of eau de cologne and they dab it on a handkerchief or something to make it nice, don't they? Yes, Olech Omar Krov. Olech Omar Krov.
I don't know, I'm not married.
Olech
Omar Krov. So he responded to him.
Excuse me, stop. Those are the things that you know before you're married. When you're married, you forget those things.
Some people look forward to it.
Olech Omar Krov.
Alech HaMakrov, so Rav Papa says to Rav Papi, on you the Pazik says, L'chol Nefesh. Dover HaShova L'chol Nefesh Mutter. Something which is similar for every person would be permitted. Be'ilo Shova L'chol. Be'ilo is equal to everybody. Avol Mugmar Eino, Eilu L'mefunakim. And mugmar is only for people who are very picky people or very particular people.
That's right.
Will we eat the haroya with it, sir?
Is there such a thing as horo or le isur? Yes. Will we
three?
Kori isur.
Haro.
Do we use the word haro for isur?
Mishim the chol adam rishai lahach nirva. Every man can be machmer, can make it harder. The same thing is for good.
You don't need a rov to be machmer. A goat can to say no. A goat can also say no as long as he's got a beard. It's fine. You don't to say no. Everybody can. The trouble is today that the person who doesn't know doesn't say no, he says yes. That is the trouble that we've got today. But in those days, a person didn't know, he would never assume or presume, he would never dare say yes. If he doesn't know, it's no.
This person, I remember learning it from our basic co-op,
yes,
power of. It's more difficult to make something mutter than usher. That's
right. That's exactly the same thing. But unfortunately, I didn't want to quote that piece of Gemara. I was hoping that nobody ever heard it. But unfortunately, Toach De'Atero, all it is quoted out of context. This is quoted to say, look here, if if a Jew, if a non-Jew marries a Jew, lives with a Jewess and there's a child, then the child is Jewish. So if a Jew lives with a non-Jewess, it should also be Jewish. So he says it's also Jewish. Why, on what basis? Koach v'yetero odin. Better, the Gemara says it's better to take the life of you. You laugh. You laugh, but that is what's happening. And it's used for that.